preferences. From what an idiot to, I never thought of it that way. Chapter 1. If you've worked within organizations for a while, you've noticed that some people seem just plain foolish. Even if they attend a selective university or take tough classes, they retain stores of stupidity that they decide to dump during your meetings. Or so it seems. Often we perceive others as stupid when they're really just different. While a few students may actually be lacking, usually our perceived stupidity merely indicates a difference in mental preferences or personality. The perception of stupidity stems from a silly tendency within all humans. Social psychologists concur that people tend to assume that others are similar to them. We are also likely to assume blindly that people think the same way that we do. We forget the seemingly obvious fact that each person is different. Everybody who respects the word diversity knows that each individual brings a unique background and perspective to the table. Yet we don't realize that people also have wholly different ways of running their brains. As a result, a person seems stupid when you determine it unfathomable to come up with the goofy opinion or conclusion that Mr. Stupid has presented. Unfathomable? Yes, but only to your particular style of running your brain. To them, it seems like the only way. An understanding of your mental preferences and how they interact with others provides a foundation for skillful student leadership. With this mastery, you'll perceive less stupidity, feel less bitterness, and interact more effectively with your peers.
Short attention span alert. This chapter contains fewer quick tips and tricks than the others. If you are in engaged thinking mode, revisit this one later. The self chapters contain more in-depth introspective goodies. You might want to start with commitment instead if you're not ready for intensive pondering. You can also start by jumping to the charts and seeing if certain descriptions grab you. But if you're up for the challenge, you'll learn 1. One way psychologists divide up the world. 2. 8 personality concepts encompassing differences. 3. 4 categories of people. 4. How to reconcile the personality assessment you did elsewhere to other personality tools. Getting started. Each human being has a unique background that affects how they perceive, interpret, and respond to their world. Yet psychologists have codified a few things that distinguish these 7 billion minds. By noting and combining the main points that differentiate thinkers, observers of humanity have empowered us to place these 7 billion humans into a few handy categories. These systems of cataloging the nature or type of people are called typologies. While many typologies float around, many of them have their roots within the granddaddy of all categorizers, the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, or MBTI. The MBTI is the most widely accepted tool for identifying mental preferences. It's a sort of personality test that catalogs differences within normal, healthy people. Often an individual will answer the simple questions and be weirded out by the results' uncanny accuracy. It's kind of like hearing a psychic reading, except this reading is considered legitimate. Millions of professionals have taken the MBTI in many languages across dozens of countries. It's great for the pros, and you'll find it's great for you. By understanding the results, you will find that you are better able to communicate and cooperate with different kinds of students all around you. So now you're curious as to where you can get your hands on a copy. You should be able to take the MBTI at your school's career center or guidance, vocational, academic advising office. People who try to help you answer the question, "What should I do with my life?" and or "What should I major in?" can make a copy available to you. It contains over 100 questions, and they may charge you a small fee. If your own school lets you down, community colleges tend to have a wealth of such advisors awaiting to assist you. However, living in the immediacy of the information age, you probably just want to do it now. Many personality tests that use MBTI terminology are available online. If you want a quick and dirty assessment that hasn't been perfected by decades of research, but gives pretty similar results, visit bit.ly/fake MBTI. That's bit.ly/fake MBTI with the MBTI's capital. That links to a site called Human Metrics and will be updated to link elsewhere in time if necessary. Going there, you can assess yourself right now. The rest of this chapter and book will provide much more insight for you if you go ahead and do that. Indeed, if you neglect the test, this chapter will seem like dull dronings about types that mean nothing to you. So do it! It's fun. The preferences. Okay, so you've taken the assessment and received a kooky letter combination such as ISTP or ENFJ, right? If not, you can choose your type from the descriptions below. So what do these letters really mean? Your version of the assessment probably had some explanation accompanying it. Go ahead and read about what your specific combination means, and you may be amazed. These pages illuminate how MBTI preferences manifest themselves and interact within the specific context of student organizations. The four questions that the MBTI answers are, 1. Where do you receive your energy? Extroversion versus introversion. 2. What type of information grabs you? Sensing versus intuition. 3. How do you make decisions? Thinking versus feeling. 4. How do you handle your business? Judging versus perceiving. Bear in mind that these preferences are just that, preferences. They indicate what comes more naturally to a particular person. A good example or illustration for preferences is how you hold a pencil. If you're right-handed, you write more naturally and smoothly with your right hand. You can write with your left hand, but it feels less natural. A preference is simply a more comfortable way of working it that manifests itself more than its alternative. In this context, personality is a decent substitute for the word preference. Your preferences may not be crystal clear at first. If you take the full Myers-Briggs, you get a numerical rating on the clarity of your preferences. Think about the clarity of your preferences as you read about the different types of people. The clearer your preference is, the more you will resonate with each description. Also, no preference is any more right, good, or conducive to leadership than any other. Different leaders bearing every preference have emerged and will lead on into the future. In the following descriptions, you'll view each opposing pair of preferences and how they interact. Well and not so well. These invisible internal preferences manifest themselves within your student organization in many interesting ways, a tiny sampling of which are on these pages. As you read more about each pair of preferences, ask yourself some questions for reflection. How am I like an extrovert, or a thinker, or sensor, etc., or an introvert? What would I do if I naturally thought the other way? Which one of my acquaintances has this preference the strongest? How do I interact with those acquaintances? When have I seen similar preference clashes or harmonies in my organization? Who in my organization would prefer to perform these described functions? First question, where do you receive your energy? Extroverts get their energy through extroversion, interacting with the outer world. They generally prefer communication and conversation over internal pondering and mental dialogue. They get excited by working through ideas out loud with others. They prefer to affiliate with lots of different people. Indeed, variety is a recurring theme for extroverts. They prefer a wide breadth of ideas, locations, and people rather than depth within these fields. They may feel a bit lonely when they don't get an adequate dose of weekend conversation and affiliation. They tend to speak up more at meetings and fire out more ideas during brainstorming sessions. They're also likely to recommend the social activities. At the conclusion of meetings, they're probably fired up and sticking around to keep the conversation rolling. Introverts, on the other hand, get more energy from internal interactions. Exploring and developing ideas inside their heads or within smaller, more intimate groups stimulate the introvert. They prefer depth over breadth. That is, they prefer drilling down into the core of ideas and people rather than flit and flurry without having gained a deep understanding. They like gatherings that are more intimate as opposed to raucous. They tend to speak less often in a meeting scenario, yet when they do, their words often reflect significant mental depth because they've been wrestling internally with the issue for some time. At the conclusion of a long meeting or interaction, an introvert often prefers to read, think, or enjoy some other form of solitude in order to recharge the batteries. Extroverts and introverts, like all people with contrasting preferences, sometimes misunderstand each other and experience conflict. Because extroverts enjoy discussing and developing ideas with others, introverts sometimes confuse an extrovert's idea as a commitment to action. Because introverts spend much time in silence at meetings, extroverts might think that the introvert is boring, sneaky, or indifferent. Meanwhile, the introvert may be getting tired of the extrovert's idle chatter. Potential mistrust of introverts' sneaky silence can damage the extrovert's interactions with the introvert. Another frequent conflict is butting heads during a planning process. Introverts may prefer to develop a plan by themselves, while extroverts believe the group interaction is the necessary process. Finally, the conflicting preferences for breadth and depth can lead to conflict when deciding how much time to spend on a particular issue. Extroverts may want to talk forever while moving on to many items, while the introvert may think that just a couple items demand particular attention. When these preferences are in balance, the extroverts will keep things moving along at a good tempo, while the introverts can slow things down when necessary to ensure that every topic receives adequate attention. The extroverts keep the ideas and dialogue flowing, while the introverts clarify the details. The extroverts survey the territory, while the introverts drill deep into the more fertile ideas. Extroverts might work on public relations tasks, while introverts delve into the operations. Before moving on to the next set of preferences, take a moment and ask yourself those questions for reflection regarding introverts and extroverts. It will make these type descriptions more worthwhile and fun. Second question, what type of information grabs you? Sensors resemble detectives. They seek out evidence and rely upon their experiences to provide practical guidance for each situation. They're like things that they can prove and verify using their five senses, hence the name. Sensors focus upon science, experience, and observation. Sensors tend to be more pragmatic and careful in their interactions. They often prefer dabbling in details and are known to challenge lofty visions with their hard-hitting, fact-grounded approach. They are great for pointing out difficulties that other team members may have overlooked. Others may call them naysayers, but they prefer to view themselves as practical. They tend to look at policies and procedures conservatively, following them to the precise letter. They're grounded in the here and now and usually feel more comfortable doing what's tried and true rather than something potentially outlandish. Intuitives, by contrast, subjugate their five senses to a kind of sixth sense. Whether they rely on ESP, intuition, or hunches, or just that gut feeling, intuitives focus upon concepts rather than facts. That is, they like to use their intuition to ferret out the bigger picture or themes or interrelationships underlying the facts. Facts are important to intuitives insofar as they relate to the larger whole and open doors to possibilities. They may dismiss details as unimportant if they fail to see how they connect to the big picture. They look at policies and procedures as guidelines that have an underlying meaning or spirit. They prefer pushing past the facts into new, exciting realms. Intuitives feel the thrill of innovation by mentally playing with new and fresh ideas. Some may say that they have their heads in the clouds, but they prefer to call that innovation or the entrepreneurial spirit. Sensing and intuition classes are perhaps the most visible within organizations. You can think of it as the classic old school versus new school struggle. The sensor wants to do things the way they did them last year, while the intuitive has a revolutionary idea for improvement. The sensor poo-poos this idea as he believes the old way is sufficient. The intuitive may feel some bitterness to that stick in the mud, while the sensor is thinking, this guy's nuts. When these preferences are in balance, however, the intuitive appreciates the constructive feedback that the sensor provides. Similarly, the sensor recognizes that groups can improve even the most outstanding methods of operation, and taking a risk with new ideas is the only way to make that happen. The sensor brings stability to the organization, while the intuitive ensures that things don't ever get stagnant or bogged down. The intuitive offers wacky new ideas, and the sensor molds them into workable solutions. Third question, how do you make decisions? Thinkers make their decisions by applying logic. An extreme thinker, think Spock from Star Trek, would rigorously apply concepts from math and science, such as syllogism and cause and effect, to make a decision. He would think as objectively as possible about all the potential ramifications and consequences stemming from a potential course of action. To the thinker, it is more important that decisions are reasonable to him as opposed to being inclusive of all viewpoints. Thinkers deliberate upon decisions using their brains to scrutinize the objective pros and cons. They tend to be brief and blunt in their communications, placing transmitting truth above transforming hearts. They often like to forego chit-chat and get down to business. Feelers, on the other hand, focus on the emotional, human side to decisions. Rather than applying universal, objective rules and principles, the feeler attends to the unique, human-related factors behind any issue. When they are evaluating options, they like to make sure that everyone feels at least okay about the course of action that they are about to take. They strive to keep team members included and build as much consensus as possible. Often, their passion, concern, and empathy influence them to make the decision that could get the most people to rally behind it. Feelers may dread conflict and get rather tense when a heated debate flares up. Things can get tense between thinkers and feelers when a high-emotion decision, such as how to correct misbehavior, is pending. In such a situation, the thinker desires to take the path that follows pre-established principles regardless of the negative emotional ramification. It's the rules, he might say. Feelers, on the other hand, will desire the course of action that maximizes team unity and spirit. The thinker may label the feeler an illogical, silly, bleeding heart fluffball, while the feeler might call the thinker a brutal and sensitive jerk. And during the name-calling, the thinker will have less trouble receiving that sort of criticism than the feeler. Feelers tend to internalize and take things more personally. As a result, they get quite angry when a thinker offers some unwanted constructive criticism. Furthermore, the feeler may be unwilling to dive into potential conflict by providing such criticism to correct a problem, thus further vexing the thinker with more illogicality. Thinkers are great for making the tougher decisions that feelers might want to avoid, but tough decisions, by the very nature of that toughness, can leave people feeling bitter or alienated. Feelers can tactfully diffuse some of this hostility, ensuring that everyone remains enthusiastic and committed to the group's purpose. Feelers are also good at encouraging the people to follow through with the tasks that challenge team members. In a well-oiled organization, the feeler appreciates the thinker's full-blown frank honesty, while the thinker envies the feeler's ability to get people engrossed. Fourth question, how do you handle your business? Judges prefer to work in a fixed and planned environment. They love agendas. Judges work well with deadlines, and they are committed to making them. Indeed, the judge often views time as sacred. They tend to be prompt and expect the same from you. A judge tends to schedule most of his life's events in a snazzy notebook, PDA, planner, or smartphone. Sometimes judges are hardcore goal setters and planners. They like to stay on top of things, be in control, and keep detailed game plans. I know one strong judge who creates elaborate Excel worksheets to keep track of the progress he makes on each of his goals. At any moment, he might tell me, I'm 84.5% on schedule. Perceivers, however, are less sensitive to the pressure of a deadline. They prefer to relax and let things unwind. They prefer to go with the flow. They are perfectly content to wait a while as they sort things out in their heads. They are more flexible and less time-driven. They prefer to plan out the big issues and let the minor issues iron themselves out. Perceivers are hesitant to commit to a schedule or a detailed plan of attack. Rather, they prefer the timing and planning to flex. They prefer open-ended spontaneity and tend to enjoy it until the last possible moment. Judges and perceivers can really wrestle in two-person teams. The judge prefers to set up checkpoints, deadlines, rules, meetings, schedules, and a roadmap as soon as possible. The judge adopts the get-or-done philosophy. The perceiver, however, feels squeezed under all those rules and restrictions. The perceiver feels that some great thing is just around the bend, and it would be best not to commit too soon. Sometimes the judge will see the perceiver as irresponsible, as the perceiver pays less homage to the judge's deities of deadlines and promptness. The perceiver thinks that the judge's condition desperately requires a chill pill. After all, the project doesn't have to be done for a whole week. When judges and perceivers complement each other, tasks get done and get done well. The judge keeps the perceiver's desire for quality within acceptable time guidelines, while the perceiver ensures that the judge doesn't jump the gun or make a hasty decision before receiving key information. The perceiver can help calm the judge when she's nearing a self-imposed deadline, and the judge can help turn the perceiver's intentions into realities. Whew! Struggling to sort it all out? Then take a breather and recap the contrasting preferences along with summary keywords associated with them. The following tables boil it down for you in a hurry. The extrovert, energized by external interactions, loves breadth and variety, gregarious, has numerous acquaintances, friendly, wacky, a people, outwardly focused, intrigued by news and external happenings, expressive, seem to know everybody. The extrovert might say, so, what's next? Whereas the introvert is energized by internal reflections. They prefer depth, to be more intensive. They have fewer but more intimate relationships, might want to get deep with you after a while. They concentrate, reflect, are intrigued by profound ideas and thoughts, tend to conserve their energy, and are interested in the internal happenings and hold back a bit in meetings. The introvert might say, I've thought about this a lot, and I believe. The sensor is focused on the practical, sensible, step-by-step, relies on the five senses, relies on past experience, handles the current business, realistic, grounded in immediate issues, down-to-earth, data, numbers, analysis, facts, procedural. The sensor might say, that's what we did last year, or, but will that really work? As compared to the intuitive, who's focused on the possible, with exciting flashes of inspiration, sudden epiphanies or revelations, sixth sense or hunches, revels in future possibilities, theoretical, imaginative, speculative, wondering what could be, fresh, new, bold, insights, entrepreneurial. The intuitive might say, why don't we try, or I had this great idea in the shower. The thinker decides with the head, objective, firm and fair justice, applying principles, criteria, categories, laws, policy. They may be impersonal, critique, engage in analysis, be blunt, be logical, engage in reason. The thinker might say, I believe our Constitution says we should, as compared to the feeler, who decides with the heart. Their thoughts might seem a bit more subjective, engage in more sympathy, empathy, compassion, values driven. They might say, I feel your pain, or be more personal and intimate with people. They may show more mercy, exceptions, be more complimentary and appreciative, more harmonious, engage in some good or bad value judgments, and want to include everybody. The feeler might ask, how does everybody feel about this idea? The judge wants to get it done. Settled, decided, fixed, planned, agendas, closure, finality, wrapped up, plans one's life, completed, let's finish this baby, urgent, deadline, regulated, controlled, goal-oriented, organized. They might say, let's just get it done and call it good. In contrast to the perceiver, who more so wants to get it perfect. Flexible, adapts while going, pending, tentative while making perfect. Get more information before deciding. Spontaneous, see what happens, go with the flow. There's always time, forget the deadline. Open to whatever emerges or changes. The perceiver might say, why don't we do this at the next meeting after we know? So after looking at these preferences, both in conflict and in balance, you may be yearning to harmonize the preference differences within your organization. If you're really antsy, skip to the synergy chapter for some concrete techniques to unlock the magic. But for now, the mere realization that you have a particular style for running your brain and that others have different styles should make you a more respectful person who is potentially less hostile in your interactions. Another typology useful in deepening the diversity realization is the Fabulous Four. With 8 preferences and 16 possible combinations, it can be hard to figure out who's who and what's what. If you prefer a more succinct summary of type and how you differ from other people, look no further than the Fabulous Four. With only 4 different categories in which to place people, you'll find it potentially easier to predict how your type will interact with another type. Since 450 BC, in the days of Hippocrates, humans have classified each other into 4 groups. These original groups were based upon the 4 humors, or 4 liquids that supposedly coursed through the veins of every human. These liquids were black bile, yellow bile, phlegm, and blood. When ancient physicians found a medical problem within somebody, they would cut them in various places to let out some key fluids and hope that they restored balance. To this day, English still contains such words as phlegmatic, which means calm, to describe a particular mood or an overall character type. Many modern-day techniques of classifying people still use 4 basic character types. Many creators of typology systems like to believe that they have devised some original scheme despite what the old-school bloodletters have to say about it. The glut of names can be a source of confusion for many students. Many tests give different labels to the same sort of person. Some conference junkies can get numerous labels placed on them from gold to guardian to censor judge to director, when in fact all these terms refer to the same type of person. Many of these classification systems roughly correlate to combinations of 2 Myers-Briggs preferences. For example, the intuitive feeler, or NF, has preferences for intuition and feeling. Sounds simple enough, but many systems only compound the confusion. For example, both the NT and SJ are called drivers according to different systems. So now you can see how all these different labels reconcile with each other. Since you may very well have taken one of these assessments in the past, take a look at the following chart. Each type represents a combination of 2 Myers-Briggs preferences. The first line lists 2 Myers-Briggs preferences, and the following lines provide an alternative name for that type. If you have not received such a label, but would like one, you can match up your 2 Myers-Briggs preferences listed on the chart. The final, right justified lines provide descriptive keywords for each of these types. You can then read more about them in the paragraphs after the chart. As with the Myers-Briggs types, actively engage yourself with the descriptions by relaying the information to the people within your organization. The first type, the intuitive feeler, or NF, also called a coordinator, Apollonian, choleric, amiable, relator, idealist, or blue. Some key words describing them are sensitive, engaging, harmonious, encouraging, loving, and lovable. The second type, the censor judge, or SJ, also called an administrator, epimethean, phlegmatic, guardian, director, driver, or gold. Key words describing that type would be stable, organized, structured, dependable, and detail-oriented. The intuitive thinker, or NT, also called the melancholic, promethean, analytical, rational, thinker, driver, green. The keywords describing that are serious, visionary, inquisitive, intellectual, philosophical. The sensor perceiver, the fourth type, is also called expressive, Dionysian, socializer, sanguine, explorer, artisan, orange. Some keywords describing them are hilarious, impulsive, competitive, self-confident, and initiative-taking. So now to describe these in some depth, the intuitive feeler, or NF. The intuitive's ability to perceive patterns and the feeler's warm empathy combine to create the ultimate in people, the intuitive feeler, or NF. This compassionate social animal is adept at discovering fascinating people and fascinating things about people. You can spot them by the way they ooze over with gooey love and joy when they see somebody they haven't seen in a while. You might hear shrieks of, "Oh my God, I haven't seen you in forever! Tell me about your life!" They tend to be huggy, chatty, warm, and caring. When you ask others if they know an NF, you're likely to receive the response, "Oh, I just love her." When it comes to your organization, NFs get their main thrill out of meeting and forming close relationships with others. Like the extroverts, they dig the social and bonding activities. They often cringe when they encounter conflict scenarios. They are also likely to bite their tongue when some serious controversy heats up. The next type, the sensor judge, or SJ. The present orientation of the sensor and the time consciousness of the judge mingle to create a rock-solid delegatee, the sensor judge, or SJ. These guys and gals are jackhammers. They'll blaze through a series of procedures with delightful commitment and consistency. If you've ever been pleasantly surprised by someone's ability to follow through where others have failed, you've probably seen an SJ in action. When it comes to an SJ, you can simply set it and forget it. SJs tend to have their established and organized lives, spaces, and methods of operations. SJs enjoy the structure and security that an organization can provide them, but they can get thrown in a tizzy when something unexpected comes up. They really enjoy the feeling of satisfaction associated with knocking down tasks. So size will abound if you ask one to suddenly halt one task to start a totally different one. The intuitive thinker, or NT. The concept orientation of the intuitive and the rational nature of the thinker team up to create a rock star in problem solving, the intuitive thinker, NT. Often fierce intellectuals, they penetrate complex problems with tenacity that you can't help but admire. They calmly inquire into the nature of a situation until they arrive at the quality solution they seek. NTs enjoy organizations because they give them a chance to expand their minds in new directions. You may get frustrated as they delight in analyzing, intellectualizing, theorizing, and strategizing, but that is how their minds play. They will get bored very quickly if they do not get a chance to apply their skills or if they have to repeat mindless tasks. The sensor perceiver, or SP. The sensor's infatuation with the moment and the perceiver's flexibility combine to create a mightily entertaining bundle of impulse known as the sensor perceiver, or SP. These are probably the funniest guys and gals you've ever seen. Some of the most ridiculous reality TV shows are likely filled with SPs, indulging in their wacky and often dangerous impulses. But these same folks, when cleaned up a bit, are known to liven a room with their wit and charm. These folks are often the life of the party, and it's hard not to enjoy their company. They like organizations because they leverage their capability to try new and exciting things and meet different kinds of people. Organizations provide new kinds of thrills that SPs can't get all by themselves. So SPs will feel dissatisfied if the organization fails to deliver on their needs for varied activities and spontaneity. Indeed, they can be a hard crowd to please, so don't be alarmed if they disappear for a spell. If your organization has some real zip to it, they'll be back eventually. Recap. People may seem stupid to you when they think differently than you do. The Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, or MBTI, lists 8 preferences that distinguish human personalities: extroversion versus introversion, sensing versus intuition, feeling versus thinking, perceiving versus judging. Combining 2 preferences creates 4 different types of people. Many such 4-type systems exist. By understanding just how you think differently, you can work more effectively with people. So the source of stupidity really lies within you. Your preferences color how you interpret your reality, and others' preferences yield differing interpretations. Recognizing and respecting these different interpretations will give you a huge leg up in Socrates' never-ending quest to know thyself. Continually observing your interactions and reactions with different kinds of people will hone your self-knowledge and leadership abilities. At first, you may find it difficult to recognize another's behavior as a natural outgrowth of their preferences. But with time and thought, you may pinpoint your group and members' natures and get more comfortable with how they differ from your own. Perhaps even more exciting, you now have a clearer idea on how you operate best, so you can structure your activities appropriately. That's right. Having articulated your uniqueness, you can lock onto ideas, opportunities, and activities that naturally suit you. If you're eager to start that process now, look no further than